Welcome to the Procurement Software Podcast, where we aim to educate and inspire you about how technology is changing and shaping our profession. The truth is, there's never been a more exciting time to be in procurement, but only if you're one of those organizations that's embracing the change and driving new developments. And this podcast is all about giving you the tools to help you get there. So buckle up and let's get right into this week's show. Yes, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Procurement Software Podcast. In today's show, we're going to be talking about the topic of invoice automation and really how that can halve the amount of time you spend on your invoicing and indeed using that as an opportunity to get over any challenges that you may have with employee retention in what is quite an administrative, boring function that often many companies struggle to retain people in. So my guest to talk about this, Kevin Kazenmeier of TradeCentric. Very warm welcome to the show, Kevin. If you maybe just want to quickly introduce yourself and we'll get right in from there.
Great. Thanks. Thanks, Shane. Thanks for having me today. So I'm from TradeCentric, head of channel development. And actually, I started in this journey like you in procurement, but my journey ended after about 5 years and switched into a supplier role where I spent the large portion of my career, about 20 years at wholesaler, distributors, basically building strategies on how to deploy both their e-commerce solution, but more importantly, how to connect buyers who utilize e-procurement and ERP systems and make it easier to do business. And really, after being on the buy side, I decided to join TradeCentric, where I can have the opportunity to basically do both.
So before we dig into the meat behind this, it's probably worth just exploring for a couple of minutes. If you could just set the scene in terms of who are TradeCentric and what do you do holistically as a platform? And then we can dive in a little bit deeper around where does the whole invoice automation piece come into your end-to-end solution? We can then sort of dig into some of the interesting results that you had from a survey that we're going to dig into further down the line.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so TradeCentric, you may have heard of us previously. We were called Punch Out To Go, but we're an integration platform that was purposely built for B2B. We started out around 12 years ago as just a solution for suppliers that needed to enable their commerce to support punch out for buyers. But we've developed that into a robust offering of connected commerce solutions that supports automating both the connection between buyers and suppliers throughout the entire procure to pay process. And so most recently, we've actually started a deeper dive into the invoicing side, as you mentioned, and how it appears to be an area where there's a lot of focus and way too much effort.
Got it. That's a really nice, succinct overview in terms of setting the scene. So I ask this to all my guests this series, which is a bit of an icebreaker. You've just been appointed head of procurement and the CFO has given you a $50,000 budget to spend on driving modernization and digitization of the procurement function. What would you spend it on?
Well, that's a great question. And I think about it, $50,000 is really not a lot. So first of all, thanks to the CFO for giving me. I would really look to get started on an automation effort. And I'm going to assume that we already have some type of procurement platform in place, and whether that's an ERP or some type of procurement system. So I'm going to make that assumption because $50,000 is not going to get me that procurement platform. But knowing what I know about procurement and the entire procurement process, I would probably look to invest that $50,000 to where we had a gap or a bottleneck in our process. And in most cases, that seems to be in the invoice side of things. And it's usually around receiving, resolving, and inside. It's kind of funny. I read a report last year from Arden Partners, and they put it that exceptions in manual processing is, love this one, the bane of AP's existence. So if I'm a procurement professional and I want to make sure that I'm working well with all of my partners, I want to make sure that they're thinking how to build my supplier relationship. So that's really where I would start digging in and looking to find some place that I could help find more efficiencies in the automation of the invoice process.
So if I paraphrase what you said, then essentially the force that's driving that decision to spend it on process automation, specifically invoice automation, is just the fact that in a typical de facto situation, there is so much manual intervention that has to take place within the average AP function, even if there's some sort of procure-to-pay system already in place.
That's correct. And ultimately, it points negative on the procurement platform that we've implemented if the AP team is still doing manual efforts on integrated solutions.
Got it. So that leads nicely on then to, you guys did a survey recently, didn't you, of Coupa users, and just getting some of the answers around satisfaction level or some of the challenges within their accounts payable process. So maybe just walk us through what you were asking them and some of the findings that came from that.
Yeah, sure. So this actually underscores kind of just what I was mentioning around, you know, where's the pain and where's the challenge in these processes? So in that survey, when we, you know, we surveyed over 100 different corporations utilizing Coupa today. And, you know, the response rate was overall very good from a satisfaction perspective. So 65% satisfied with their procurement system. The interesting piece is when you took a deeper dive on that 65% satisfaction rating, 33% of those said that their invoicing was a problem with their. And so when you, again, take that one level deeper and try to find out what the problem is, the problem seems to be with invoices coming into their platform, bottlenecks in their AP, with friction in their supplier relationships. And basically, no one's really looking at how to address it. They're just calling out, well, I have a problem. And then, you know, to contrast that, the 35% that actually also claim those same problems, they're basically ready to rip and replace their procurement platform.
Interesting. So what's driving that then? Is it, I mean, I'm not sure if you actually got any data from this or it's more just gut feeling from knowing who you were surveying, but is it siloed organizations that are driving that? Because the two answers kind of contradict one another, don't they?
They do. And, you know, it's siloed organizations. It's challenged suppliers, you know, it's suppliers that lack capability to support the requirements. So maybe someone in senior levels of your organizations decides we're going to implement this spend management system, this platform, the way to change our business. But they didn't align the two groups that are key to this platform being a success, and that's procurement and finance. Now, in some organizations, to work well together because they may be aligned. They may even report up under the same organization. But in other areas, they're separate and distinct. And sometimes they don't even share, you know, the challenges that they have with the supplier that they both share in common.
It's shocking that we're still having this conversation in 2024, isn't it? But you're absolutely right. The temptation's always there to blame it on the tech and to, as you said, rip out the existing platform, whereas, you know, in reality, they're either not looking at their internal process or they're not really speaking adequately to some key suppliers to understand how the optimization can be achieved and the whole thing can work harmoniously together. Who's typically responsible? Is it, should procurement or should finance be responsible for this? And it's kind of a loaded question, I know, but what are you seeing out there?
So in good organizations that really focus on driving the most amount of spend through their platform, it's a combined effort. But in most cases, it's one where that procurement organization rolls under finance and they have specific goals. And I'll give you a quick example of one where an organization that has two separate teams, the initiative was led by one organization, the finance side of things, but there wasn't much alignment on the procurement side. And then basically what ended up happening was procurement said, oh, you want me to get all the suppliers onboarded? I will get them onboarded. And they did so to getting 99% of their supply base under the same umbrella on their Coupa application. So now they could claim, I have all my Coupa suppliers here. But when you start to unpack that with the AP team and you understand, well, what are their challenges? They'll tell you that, well, 93% of those suppliers are still doing things manually. And they're still causing pain in our process. They're still emailing POs. They're still sending PDF invoices. They're causing us to do a lot of extra work that we didn't even do prior to implement a new procurement system.
That's the classic example of onboarding doesn't necessarily equal success. Because, you know, on the one hand, yeah, and finance could, or whoever's responsible for that part of the process could quite legitimately say, well, we've ticked the box and we've got 99% of suppliers onboarded. But typically, who does that work then fall back with? The ultimate backstop or the ultimate wicket keeper, to use a cricket from British, to use a cricket phrase, is procurement, right? Because if accounts payable is not answering their phones or answering their emails, ultimately, if the supplier gets frustrated, and the last course of action is putting you on stop and terminating deliveries until you fix any open invoices, overdue invoices. No prizes to guess who the ultimate person is that ends up holding the baby there. It's the buyer or the category manager that's responsible for managing that vendor.
Yeah.
Why do procurement and accounts payable then have such a fractious relationship when it comes down to this? Is it just like you said, just different reporting lines a lot of times and misaligned objectives?
I think that's what it ultimately comes down to is their objectives are separate. And those organizations that have brought the two worlds together to share their responsibilities and share in the effort of launching the platform have seen the most success. I think the other problem that we have here is people are creatures of habit and there's some fear that goes into this. So wait, if I call out that there's a challenge here, I'm having a problem, how does that impact my role? And so sometimes they're comfortable with just sticking with the status quo. And until you start to poke at that challenge, that's when you're going to start to find out that there is a problem. But if not, they'll just continue to do their job until maybe decide they don't want to do that job anymore.
Do you find it makes a difference whether it's a procurement-led or a finance-led project in terms of success rate and adoption?
So I feel like the most success that I've seen has been procurement because they control the relationships with the supplier. But a procurement led that has basically in lockstep with finance is those ones that have the most success. And, you know, I could give you a quick example of a customer of ours that we've worked with, and their procurement team is managing relationships for some really big suppliers that are key to getting them the supplies they need to perform the services that they provide. And so they've had challenges with some of those suppliers because they haven't been paying their bills on time. So if they don't pay their bills, they risk getting cut off. So what they started to do is they started to partner with their finance team and their AP team to identify who are the most challenging suppliers, why are they the most challenging suppliers, how can I go ahead and help you not only talk to those suppliers to see what they need to do, but maybe I need to go find somebody or find a solution to help meet them or bridge the gap, right, within the two solutions so that I can still transact with them the way I need to, but I can also ease the burden on the AP side of thing and still maintain my ordering frequency with that supplier.
Yeah, and I'm curious when you said usually or oftentimes procurement-led projects tend to be more successful because procurement owns the overall supplier relationship. I would have approached that slightly differently in that finance or accounts payable, and I'm being a little bit presumptive here, but they don't necessarily care about the end user or the supplier's user experience because all they want to do is automate the downstream part of the payment side. Whereas from a procurement perspective, we're looking at it in the sense that, okay, yes, we don't want to have to get our hands dirty and fix accounts payable problems. But at the same time, we want to have the highest possible level of both internal stakeholder and supplier adoption of the platform. And if the choice of software is being driven by finance, I think they, and maybe I'm being a bit unfair here, but I would suggest that they're probably more features driven in what they look for. Whereas procurement, I think, is going to be much more UX driven, mainly just through experience of having used clunky software in the past. And a lot of the legacy players, you know, they're not particularly user friendly. And that's why, you know, we have companies like yours that have a bolt-on solution that allow, you know, a high volume, frequently purchased items to be purchased through punch out catalogs. Would you go along with that?
That definitely is a fair thought. I mean, you think about from a procurement perspective, my goal is to get as many users, right? Use that term in my internal customers, as many of them utilizing the platform as possible. So the UX has to be good. It has to be a good experience, because one bad experience, no one's going to use it. You're going to start having renegade spend. Everybody's going to try to do things their own way. So to that point, definitely. But I think from a supplier management perspective, and if you start to look at a lot of the procurement software that's coming out today, there is more and more focus on, you know, supplier health, supplier relationship management features. And it's at the tip of procurement because, you know, they have to make the decision. Is this a supplier that I want to do business with? Is this someone that's financially stable? Is this someone that, you know, is meeting my ESG goal? So there's a lot more that goes into it. That's why I feel like from a procurement led, they're now thinking of a lot more than just UX, because they're thinking, well, which suppliers are good for my platform? Can I build that relationship with, and that won't cause problems downstream? And that's why they have to be aware of what's happening now on the finance side and the AP side as well.
Yeah, an account and from a supplier perspective, account management of a customer is part of their internal costing process, right? So, I mean, if you're a pain in the backside as a customer to manage from a supplier perspective, then in some way that's going to be baked into the cost of the final product, unless you're just buying something that's completely commoditized and is 100% price driven. But yeah, it's often, especially in strategic supplier relationships, if there's a degree of key account management tied into that and you're not a particularly easy customer to deal with, then in some way, shape or form, you're going to be paying for that as the end customer. And I think procurement is starting to realize that more and more, but it's still really only the early adopters that are really thinking about how can we make life easy for suppliers without, you know, giving them an easy ride on the commercial terms that we drive with them. So yeah, you know, I would certainly go along with that. Let's move on and talk a little bit then now about the invoice automation piece, particularly around how this, you know, not only drives process efficiency, but can also be seen as a way of fixing some of the challenges of hiring and retaining people in these sort of quite mundane, repetitive, white collar positions. You know, especially if we turn to developed economies like North America and Europe, where there are alternatives now in terms of, you know, what do these people want to do as jobs? You know, if you can find something where you can work from home or work remotely and do something more stimulating, working in an office in an accounts payable department, doing a very transactional invoice clerk processing type role, it's not attractive nowadays, is it? So talk to me a little bit around how you're able to sell invoice automation as the fix to this.
So it's interesting, right? And you mentioned it's not an attractive role, right? And I actually, you know, we started dealing with some of our customers who now, again, because they've had the visibility into the AP side of things, start to unpack it a little bit more to understand. We have a group of six that are managing the invoices from, you know, our supplier base. And every year we're turning over two of the six, and we're going through a training expense and we're going through an onboarding expense of just getting them to speed. And then next thing you know, another one quits. And so they started to look at it from the perspective, well, I could find a way to do this and to leverage the amount that I'm paying that individual and offset that with the cost of some automation solution. Is that possible? And that's one of the reasons that led us down that path of really offering more of these invoice specific solutions to buy side customer, is because if you start to think about it, every organization has this challenge. They may not have just, you know, taken a deep dive into it yet. They may not have looked at it, but when you start to ask questions on how long does it take to run through the reconciliation process for your supplier invoices? What's your exception rate look like? What's the percentage of time you are spending on those exceptions? How many invoices do you have to manually touch? You start to learn the scope of the problem, and you start to learn how many resources that you're spending on that. And maybe those resources can be allocated to something that's less mundane, right? And more exciting.
Yeah, assuming that the employees in question are capable and willing to do that, it's a very valid point. Yeah, you would probably have less turnover and less attrition if you're able to give them a task that's a little bit more stimulating. I think you approached it from one angle, but you know, let's approach it from another angle slightly. I mean, okay, an accounts payable team member probably isn't someone that you're going to have to go and use a headhunter to recruit for. But even if you're in your example, if that team of six is typically turning over a third of their team year on year, A, you've got potential impacts to your business if your team is one or two people down in a team of six and you're having to pay invoices on time to enable your business to keep running. There's going to be some that fall through the cracks, right? And then you're probably going to have vendors that put you on stop because you've got overdue invoices. And that could be, especially in a manufacturing business, that could be something that stops your production line. So there could be a real cost associated with that. But then the other side of that is, and I think you touched on it a little bit, is just the cost of hiring, training, and getting them up to speed. And even in, you know, a relatively administrative job, it's probably going to take them a month before they're firing on all cylinders and they're as productive as the existing team members. And okay, that's not a big deal if you have to replace one team member every 2 or 3 years. But to your example, if you're replacing a third of your team every year, and I think that's certainly realistic and mirrors what you see in a lot of these business process outsourcing BPO organizations that manage accounts payable on behalf of corporate clients. I've worked with them in the past in my career. I mean, attrition is a massive problem for them. So is this one of the main selling points that you see, or is this something that resonates with your potential customers from a sales perspective when you talk to this type of value driver?
So that's a great question, right? And when you start to talk about the challenge and the process, you know, you may get people that throw up a wall or a fence and say, oh, that's not for us. We don't need that. But when you start to unpack that, well, how do you grow your organization? Or what's the career path look like in your organization? Or what's the turnover like in your organization? And you start touching on those areas, you get to have a better conversation and a deeper understanding. We're not just looking here to sell you a solution. We're looking at something that's going to help you grow your organization, keep people interested. Because when you, let's just talk about it. Today's day and age, the younger generation coming in, they want to see a career. They want to know that they're coming in. I've started something small and learn it, but I don't want to be doing this for years and years, right? So if you could bring them in, teach them a skill and then say, oh, this is how your path to grow. And you're not having to say, you're going to be doing this and correcting invoices probably the next couple of years before I can find something else for you. That's more challenging. But now if you have a solution and you're saying, I need you to understand this process. You may be able to work with these suppliers. This is how we're going to onboard them into these new and integrated automated solutions. You're giving someone something that's constantly changing, evolving, and maybe even, again, giving them opportunities to grow.
And through that, you're able to retain them. And also, I guess, in terms of what the module costs, you can use that as a legit argument to say that the cost of hiring and training those people, as well as any potential disruptions to your business, will be offset by the cost of the software.
That's correct. And the other thing that we would throw out there too is, and this is something, again, a lot of organizations that I've talked to, they don't measure it. They track it when they receive it, but they don't measure the opportunity loss.
Yeah.
And that's payment discounts, right? Early payment discounts as well, added onto that. If you're going through all these manual processes, you're not getting any of your early payment discounts. How much of that are you really tracking as opportunity lost, right? And now if you put an automated solution, you're achieving that, you know, some an opportunity gain as well to add some. When do they ever say that procurement is a sales center, right? Or they're a revenue generating center, typically an expense center.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's a beef of mine as well that procurement should be seen as a profit center rather than a cost center when you look at what they can deliver to both top and bottom line. But you're absolutely right. Yeah. So let's move on then and talk a little bit about the impact then of all this and bringing it into what you as TradeCentric sort of offer as an end-to-end solution. So walk me through maybe some success stories of how the invoice automation piece fits into the wider value of TradeCentric as a platform and how that forms part of the strategy of selling and onboarding customers to use the whole end-to-end solution.
Sure. So Ted, two good stories I can tell, but you know, for the sake of time, I'll keep them short. We have a customer that we've showcased in a lot of places, and I can share the name, Mars Veterinary Health. You know, a big buy-side organization. They're part of the Mars family. They, you know, manage and maintain veterinary clinics all around the world. They implemented Coupa several years back, and they kind of hit a breaking point. They were only able to get a few large suppliers onboarded through their automated processes. But all their key suppliers that provided them everything they needed to perform the surgeries, the meds for the pets and everything, that was a very complex process. And they began to leverage the TradeCentric platform to help bridge the gap between some of those suppliers that maybe didn't have the full technical capabilities to compete and show up within their Coupa platform. So because Mars was successful in taking their spend under management to over 93%, and they were able to build processes around automation, they were able to take 1.5 FTE from their clinics that spent time ordering and processing invoices to actually doing things as they call saving pets' lives, right? So now they were able to do that because they paid a little bit to connect the process, basically. It was interesting because I was at ProcureCon last year, and when Mars spoke, one of the takeaways from that was that, hey, in procurement, you may actually have to pay a little bit to ease the burdens of the suppliers in your organization. Showcase that, okay, we're working as a partner, but in the end, it's going to benefit your organization greatly, especially if you're utilizing spend management.
Yeah, it's often you have to invest a little bit of money to see the payback. The whole, you have to speculate to accumulate. But it's back to the age-old problem, isn't it? That procurement often doesn't have a budget. And even though it's a solution that's there in plain sight that will fix the problem, they often struggle to convince the CFO or whoever it is that holds the purse strings that this will enable their team to take a step back and to spend more time on added value activity. But for whatever reason, we still seem to be having that debate.
Well, if my CFO is as generous as you and handed out $50,000, I'm good.
Yeah, and it's not, you're right. And going back to the original comment that you made right at the start, you're right. It's not a lot of money, but I hit on that figure simply because you can get software that can do a lot for that budget. You know, is it going to be something like a Coupa or an SAP Ariba? No, absolutely not. Of course it's not. It wouldn't have that sort of range of features and be developed for clients of or customers of that size. But you can get a lot of good procurement software for $50,000 that will solve one or more of your particular challenges, be it spend management, contracts, procure to pay. It just requires you being a little bit smarter about it and not just opting for a legacy brand that you're aware of just because they have the biggest marketing budget. But there is software out there. Is it easy to find? No, which is why we do what we do here at Procurement Software, but it is out there. But anyway, by the by, just before we sign off, I want to do a quick round, and we do this with all of our guests. Just a couple of quick fire questions. If you could live anywhere in the world, Kevin, where would it be?
You know, that's a tough question to ask because there's a lot of great places, you know, to live, but I would pick this one location only because it's taken me a long time to get to experience Europe. And it's interesting, right towards the end of COVID, I got to have my first trip out to France. And then last year, ProcureCon, I was in Barcelona and then spent some time in Madrid. And so getting around Europe seems phenomenal for me. So I read a lot about Zurich, and Zurich is one of these cities that low crime rate, top-notch healthcare, they get high ratings on quality of life. And it seems to be centrally located. And it also gives me access to a lake. It gives me access to the Alps, great hiking in the Alps, but more importantly, easy access to explore more of Europe. So I think that would probably be my first choice.
Interesting. Yeah. If you've got the salary to live there, then yeah, it's a beautiful city for sure. And then the last one would be, what would be your guilty pleasure of choice? And the only proviso is it can be anything, but you've got to keep it clean.
Yeah. And I like how you preface it with that at the end. So guilty pleasure, and it's funny because I actually did this last week when my son brought me one home, and that would be a McDonald's hot dog sundae. Now, it's very basic. It's just salt vanilla ice cream with a glob of hot fudge on top. But it harkens me back to my childhood at times, and I can remember getting that. And it's not like going to a big ice cream shop and getting all this stuff. It's simple. It's good. And sometimes it can be a stress reliever. So I like to indulge in them at least maybe once a month, and maybe more if I'm riding by McDonald's and I just say, hey, I feel like having a vanilla ice cream with some hot fudge.
Yeah, I get that. So we better wrap this up. So if anyone would like to learn more about TradeCentric or Connect Review, where should we send them?
Well, they can be sure to come to TradeCentric.com. We have a special page for buyers, and they can find out about our buy-side solution. Or if they want to just talk to me, they can connect to me and find me on LinkedIn at Kevin Kazemeyer.
And we will link to all of that in the show notes. Kevin, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining me. And yeah, it's an interesting one, this is, because I think more and more the recruitment market to find good, reliable people is going to continue to get harder, especially in countries that have, you know, demographic challenges. And it's just about working smarter now and maybe taking that budget away from personnel and salaries and putting it into technology. It's a very simple change, but it's a very meaningful one that any organization can make and get pretty quick ROI. It being completely platform agnostic, I think there's a very viable business case, whatever you invest in here, to automate as much as possible of your invoicing. So yeah, Kevin, thanks again. And yeah, good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today. Appreciate it.
So that was invoice automation, very quick and easy win, ladies and gentlemen, ProcureTech fanboys and fangirls. So just one last quick thing before we sign off. Please do go into Apple Podcasts and leave us a review if you listen to us through the Apple platform and you like us. It does help us to get more reach and more word of mouth discovery. We'll be back same time next week. Until then, take care wherever you are in the world. Be productive and disruptive, and bye for now.